You know, I think we've gone past that era of the customer is always right, because guess what? Most of the time they're not. There's no reason why you can't stand firm and be confident in the fact that you're doing the right thing. And if they want to kick back, then tell them to bloody leave.
Hospitality is an industry that many people come into and come out of. It's also an industry that people stay in for a long time. But longevity in hospitality can be tricky. Sometimes it seems like it's an industry built for the young, not for people who want to use their experience and stick around for forever. Today, we are talking to Alex Ross, who describes herself as a hospo lifer. She's been an absolute mainstay and innovator in the Melbourne bar scene. She's currently living in country Victoria. Welcome, Alex. So great to have you here on Dirty Linen.
Thanks for having me, Danny.
I'm thrilled to have you. So I did a call out last week on my Instagram and said, you know, a bit of an open invitation for people to get in touch if they thought they should be on the podcast. And you came very highly recommended from one of your friends. You have to talk to Alex.
Oh, bless them all.
Give us a little bit of backstory. Tell me about your time in hospo.
I've been in hospitality for close to 30 years now, showing my age, but I started in a cafe at 15 and I worked my way up and started managing a few places. And then one day Mum and I decided to open a cocktail bar in Brunswick Street in Fitzroy, which we had for 9 years. It was at the very early stage of the cocktail boom. In fact, it hadn't actually quite happened at that point. And my bar, Ginger, was one of the bars that actually helped lead the charge in that. And the rest is history, I guess.
Well, yeah, Ginger was definitely one of those bars where, you know, cocktails were, I guess, they were culinary. You know, it was like you didn't just go there. You went there for a bit of an adventure, a taste adventure, you know, a venture through different styles of alcohol, different flavour profiles. I mean, what do you think was happening in the bar scene at that time that you really helped push along?
Well, we sort of decided it was time to oh, God, I say educate, but I find that is a little bit arrogant. But it was about educating our drinkers. It was about, you know, getting rid of that crusty bottle of Advoca or that open bottle of vermouth that had gone off on the shelf and use fresh ingredients and source good quality spirits. And back in, 2001 when we opened, there weren't heaps of really great spirits on the market. You had your stock standards, but there was so much stuff you couldn't get, and we just watched that grow with demand as more and more bars started experimenting and researching. It was great.
Is there a drink that you did there that you feel like, yep, this really speaks to our project?
Oh, there was a few. We look back in the early Ginger days, aside from our $8 martini, which, my God, if I could find one of those now, I'd be thrilled. We probably used way too many ingredients. Actually, not probably. We definitely did. Because we were using so much fresh produce and we were so excited about it, you know, they were the days of that early cocktail revolution before we became all about, you know, bringing back the classics, and we would have, you know, 12 great ingredients in a drink, which is just ridiculous. But we had some fantastic drinks like the ginger martini, of course. We had a sapphire cilantro, which was a gin, and coriander. What else was in it? Strawberries, all sorts of stuff. Basil Boo. We had basil and passion fruit. And there was some wild and wacky stuff.
I think, you know, you can sort of look back at cuisine of the early noughties as well and think people were probably using a few too many ingredients, and it feels like, you know, over the past maybe 15 years, it's been a bit more about stripping things back and sort of putting produce at the centre. But I think in a way cocktails and food have been on a similar trajectory, but it was bars like Ginger that sort of put them on the level, I reckon.
Yeah, I agree. And I look, you know, you can give a bit of kudos to some of those early those chefs from that era as well. I think there were some fantastic things coming out of out of kitchens, and that definitely inspired all of us.
Yeah. What were the restaurants around at the time that that you remember loving and being inspired by?
Oh, God, that's going to test my memory. you know, just the staples, the classics like your Cicciolina's and Donovan's, and then, look, you're really pushing it.
That's all right. tell us how things progressed in bars, because you didn't stop at Ginger. What other things did you do?
I went on to do some consultancy. I went and ran quite a few other people's bars. I worked for the Chalker Group. I worked for the Match Group, and did some general management gigs. I stopped doing heaps of service. As much as I was hosting, it was more back of house and management work. And then I went on to consult and helped others build their bars and grow from concept to design to project management. And then I went on and did some work with brands and spirits. I got to work with some fantastic spirits. One of my favorites was Tequila Tromba. And I did that for about a year and a half and got to travel Australia and teach bartenders about good tequila. It was great.
Yeah, goodness me. We certainly needed to learn about tequila. I still do have a bit of a, you know, early 90s shudder. maybe mid 90s, I can't remember, but, you know, that's the whole point. That's it. It's like I just can't remember good tequila in my early drinking days.
There really wasn't any available. It was appalling what was on the market.
Yeah, we've definitely come a long way. But it's interesting hearing you talk about, you know, moving out of that front of house side of things. And it makes me, think about, you know, what I started this chat with, you know, about this whole idea of longevity in hospitality generally, but perhaps, you know, even more so in bars. I mean, what are the pathways? Was that something that did you really have to forge a path for yourself, or did you feel like there were pathways sort of there in front of you?
There was a bit of both. It was interesting in the Ginger days, the whole concept of the brand ambassador was still in its infant stage. So as we moved through those years, we started seeing more and more bartenders being able to start travelling the world and do amazing things with big brands and big companies. For me personally, I struggled a little bit. I've always been good at being a boss, not very good at being not a boss. and also being a woman, I struggled with that as well. It was a very male heavy industry back then, and I even struggled in my own bar to get female bartenders. You know, they're called bartenders now, great, but back then it was really, really hard to find career orientated bartenders. And then when I moved into consulting, I struggled with, you know, after, you know, decades of experience trying to nail those gigs and get those contracts, where there were a lot of bartenders who had perhaps been bartending for not even half the time I had been, but they were just good at the gab and you know, they were male and they happened to get the job. And I don't know, I think as a woman, I'm not the best at selling myself. I think modesty is one of those things that we just sort of tend to fall back into because it's easier than, you know, confronting people head on with it. So I lost a lot of gigs that way to inexperienced bartenders.
Yeah, that's really telling, I reckon. And I'm sure that your experience, or, you know, this idea of not being really gung-ho about selling yourself and putting yourself forward, you're definitely not unique in that. It's something that I think women are trained into, and people are trained to see women in a certain way and to see women in certain roles, and leadership positions are often, women are often passed over for those positions. Do you think that's something, you know, that you could see in the broader hospitality industry? I mean, do you think it was particularly prevalent in the drinking side of things?
I think in booze all up, I think whether it's wine, we've seen a lot of that with sommeliers and whatnot, spirits definitely. You look even today at the the amount of brand ambassadors that are out there, and I can tell you right now the percentage of women in those roles is still small, but I think that people are now actively pushing and looking for extra alternatives, and it seems to be that those that are a little bit louder about what they believe in tend to sort of get to the forefront. I mean, that's what they want with BAs, that's what they want with managers, is people who will stand up and say things, and there's less eye rolling these days as there was back when I was banging the gong.
It's really interesting, you know, like if you think about Australia's drinking culture, it's, you know, if you the sort of cliche, it's super blokey, you know, it's boys at the bar, it's you know, very, it's about getting drunk. It's, but I feel like surely as drinking culture becomes more sophisticated, there needs to be a diversity of voices that are talking about it, that are creating the drinks themselves, you know, and I mean the base spirits as well as the mixed drinks. I mean, as we're talking about it, I just feel like there's an enormous territory that's yet to be explored properly.
There really is. And you look at it when they, you know, even just people ordering, you know, cocktails, don't give me a girly drink or don't put it in a girly glass, all the way up to, you know, distillers. There are so many amazing women distilling booze these days, particularly in Australia. And it's really exciting to see. We have an amazing palate as women. Traditionally, we understand those nuances, and it makes total sense that we're in the driving seat there creating this stuff.
Yeah, so interesting. So, Alex, tell us what's taken you out of Melbourne and to Benalla, where you're living at the moment.
Well, initially I moved up here. My mum comes from this area, so I've got a heap of family up here. We were born and raised in the city. So I never lived in the country, but would always sort of come up for holidays and whatnot. My mum moved up here about 8 years ago, I think. And I kept visiting and realizing, you know, I was doing a lot of work in the city, and I was stressed out and never had much time for myself or time just to breathe and let my shoulders, you know, stop wearing my shoulders as earrings. You know, I'd sort of, every time I could, even if it was just for an overnight, I'd be pack the dogs up into the car and drive up here to take a breath and see some, you know, nature and wildlife. And what I saw when I was here was that there was some really great opportunities to open up some spaces. And I'm a big foodie. I love to cook and I love to bake. And I came up with an idea, a business idea. I was going to open up a little cakery up here. And I moved up here 6 months into it. I was just about to sign a lease on this beautiful, beautiful old butcher's shop, which I was going to turn into my little cakery. And then I got diagnosed with breast cancer, of all things. And my whole world stopped. And I spent a year in treatment and getting through all of that. And I can tell you right now, if I hadn't been here, if I was going through that in Melbourne, I would have absolutely lost my nanas. And to go through something so big in a space, I always think about space, there's just heaps of space up here, and to go through something as traumatic as that with this much space on offer and this much fresh air and nature, I honestly, it was actually quite a positive experience. And I got through that and very fortunately. And then it was interesting because I'd spent that 12 months flat on my butt sort of getting through all this. I'd had a chance to really get to know the town better and realise that coming in with my Melbourne gung-ho attitude really wasn't quite what Benalla needed. And you know, just getting back through all the nitty-gritty bits when your body does all this strange stuff when you're going through chemo and radio. So I actually ended up working at the local pub, the Northo, shout out to the Northo, they're amazing, and just started bartending again. It was just great, just working in a country pub with a bunch of really great people. It was really humbling, actually, and I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Well, I really want to come back to the Northo because I'm also a fan of that great Benalla pub, but I'd love just also to going back to, you know, the great health challenge that you face, so many people in hospitality work in casual roles. They don't necessarily have heaps of sick leave, if any. They're unlikely to be insured to the hilt. Tell me about that side of it. You know, what kind of, how perilous can it be for some people to face something really major like that and be a hospitality worker?
It's really scary. You know, you get funding from the government, you get a minimum or below minimum wage, let's be honest. And I know everyone's sort of experiencing it now with everything that's happening with COVID. But what amazes me so much is that hospitality are the most generous people you've ever met. And you know, they're the ones that tip when they're out, and they're the ones that are usually living hand to mouth and on pretty rubbish wages a lot of the time. And their shifts can come and go without notice, mostly because they're casual or permanent part-time. And my industry just rallied behind me. It was the most incredible thing, and I will forever be grateful for the amount of love and support and financial support that I received from these amazing people to get through that period. So aside from my family and my friends, my hospitality friends, there were fundraisers. There was a fantastic party at Black Pearl. They had fundraisers in other states of Australia, and they got me through it all. I would never have been able to do it without them.
That's so amazing. Like, I've got tears in my eyes thinking about that, but I also have really mixed feelings about it, Alex, because like, yes, the community's supportive, but as you say, they're also often the people that are really underpaid and really struggling, and they'll give you their last dollar for sure. But structurally, isn't there a problem with that?
Oh, absolutely. And that's something the government needs to answer for, and that's something that the bar owners or the restaurant owners sort of need to be looking at. You know, if you've got a large venue that hires, you know, tens of people, 20 people, and every single one of them is on casual work status, there's a real problem there with that work, with that business model, really, if you think about it. And it's so, so, so common.
Yeah. I mean, I can also see it from the business's point of view, like, you know, there's peaks and troughs in trade, and you can't, you know, those permanent, whether they're part-time or full-time employees, that, you know, it's a different kind of financial load for the business to carry. I can see it from both sides or from all sides as more than two perspectives, but yeah, it just, as much as it's super heartwarming for the community to rally around people that need it, it's, you know, you happen to be a great person, like a real people person. You've created lots of connections over the years, but you know, someone who's, I don't know, like not like hasn't made so many friends, they should still be looked after, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's where JobKeeper now, but you know, Centrelink payments and benefits and all of that sort of stuff really need to be assessed properly, because none of that is livable. You know, and if something happens to you, like me, I had car payments. I just signed a lease for a place that I was living in on my own. You know, you just, and so many people are going through these sort of issues and unseen issues. You know, I can tell you right now, years ago on my superannuation, you've got income protection usually built in your superannuation, and I stopped that years ago because it was costing me too much in my super. And, you know, my accountant sort of said to me, you know, you need to check on that, blah, blah, blah. And my God, was I kicking myself when I checked it after I got diagnosed and realised that I didn't have that protection there, because it was chewing into my retirement fund. I think in this industry, and I think business owners are in the same position, you're living for now. You're not living for the future. You're basically doing what you can do to get by.
Yeah, that's right. I think maybe income protection, well, I don't know, but like employers are required to pay super. I mean, it would be great if some kind of income protection was built into that. But then even as I'm saying that, I'm thinking, shouldn't the government be picking that up? But then I'm also thinking, oh, I don't know, like we're going to be paying for this pandemic for generations. I don't know. Obviously, we're not going to sort it all out in this conversation, but I think there's something in, you know, some kind of living wage and some kind of better social protections for people in hospitality that are going to be part of attracting people to the industry now and in the future, because as we also know, that is a big problem.
Well, that's it. And you think about it, it shouldn't be where do you go with that? Do you raise the prices in your venue to reflect a better wage for your staff and an easy turnover? Or do you, you know, I moved to Benalla and there were, you know, coffee over here was not great, when especially coming from a Melbourne mindset. But to buy a coffee up here was like $4.50. It's now around about $5 for a standard coffee. In Melbourne, I was going back to Melbourne to do work, and you know, coffees were still sitting at $3.80. And I'm sitting there going, "How do you make money off this? You can't. That's cost price to sell your coffee, and it's as simple as that." And I think that, you know, you change those little bits and pieces, and people follow suit. But then, you know, with COVID and everything, it's really interesting to see how busy, I mean, in regional, we've come in and out of lockdown a lot more than you guys have in Melbourne. But to watch how busy these venues are, these cafes and these restaurants and these pubs are, the moment lockdown's finished, and I know it's not reflected in the city, in Melbourne, in the CBD when they come out, but my God, there's money to be made out here and people are willing to spend. So why not add those extra couple of bucks? I don't know. There's no real answer.
Let's talk about the Northo and, you know, the whole notion of a great country pub. Give us a bit of a rundown on the Northo.
Look, you know, it's funny to come and work in the country as opposed to super high standards for cocktail bars and whatnot and all the work that I've done elsewhere, it's amazing to be able to just sit back and worry about hospitality. You know, hospitality has always been my number one thing when it comes down to it. It doesn't matter how good you are making that drink or serving, you know, getting those meals out to the table. If you're not doing it with warmth and generosity, you're not doing it. You're not being hospitable. And there's you know, and I think that's what I enjoyed about coming and working at the North. It was just all about welcoming people home, and you walk into that place and you feel like you've come home. And that's what I used to expect of my staff at Ginger. You know, they need to walk in and they need to feel like they're supposed to be in that place and that they're a part of it. And I get that at the North, though, and it's just been wonderful. It also helped to introduce me to a community that I was a stranger to. You know, I've made more connections by working at the pub than I have anywhere else here in Benalla. And I've got friends for life.
How important has the pub been for Benalla through the lockdowns, through the openings and the closings? And I mean, pubs are such, you know, they're so interwoven with the community, and communities have been so disrupted. You know, what sort of role has it played?
Well, it is. It's like home, you know. As soon as the lockdowns are over, I mean, that phone there, my God, I have never worked anywhere where the phones don't stop ringing like that. It used to drive me nuts, and there'd been nights when I actually, you know, full service, 7-8 o'clock on a Friday night, and we are rammed. I'm throwing that phone in the bin. I'm sorry, boss. I threw the phone in the bin multiple times. I was so over it. Everyone is just gagging to get out, and they're just there as soon as they can be. And we're also, it's an interesting thing with Benalla, we've actually got 5 pubs in town. One's been empty for almost a decade, which is an absolute crying shame. One only opens when restrictions are completely lifted in full. Another one just changed hands, and another one just operates a kitchen. They do some amazing food out of there. So the Northo is the only one that's really always there. As soon as lockdown's in, they're doing takeaway food. They're serving all of their meals on real plates to stop that landfill. And they're always open. And then the moment lockdown ceases, they're open for trade again. And Christmas Day is the only day of the year that they're not open. So to build that trade and to always be busy and always have patronage, they've done an amazing job.
So hang on, tell me about this real plate thing. Do people bring a plate or does the pub give away a plate? Like, how does that work?
It's a bit of both. In the beginning, we scoured, I didn't do it. I was just helping with the other stuff. They scoured all the up shops and just bought up as many plates as possible, and everything goes out on a real plate covered in tin foil. And then we have trays at the front and the back of the pub where people can just drop their plates off at the end. So every now and again we have to do a cry out for more plates. It happens more frequently at the moment because it's been very busy, which is fantastic. I figure the more we're crying for plates, the busier we are, so that's great. So people just drop plates off for us and then we send them out again.
That is so awesome. I just absolutely love it. It's just really speaks of country towns. So great. It's so good. So, Alex, there's been a bit of talk from the Victorian Premier and other people about regional Victoria hopefully reopening soon, definitely before Melbourne, and then being a bit of a trial site for some new models of dining where we're welcoming vaccinated diners to eat inside. Has there been much talk about that?
Look, it's going to be difficult. I think it'll work in the end, just like the QR codes. There was so much kickback over the QR codes, and there still are. I mean, there's your tinfoil hat wearers everywhere. We've got a township that has a large older demographic. So some people aren't equipped with the right handsets or whatnot to use. So we're still in many places offering the old handwritten logins and all of that sort of stuff. I think there'll be kickback and I think there'll be fighting, but I think eventually it'll just become part of what you do. It's just one of those things. I think one of the biggest things that used to bother me every time we came out of lockdown was serving customers that just didn't want to accept that was the way it was, and they would treat you like you were the asshole in that, you know. So whether it was having to check for postcodes, which we had to do frequently to make sure that no one was coming from lockdown areas, whether it was checking in on QR codes, whether it was wearing masks when you weren't seated at your table. And it just got to the point where I build the Northo's website as well. That's all me. And I ended up putting a whole page of frequently asked questions on, which is only up when we're back open for trade. But at the end of it, it was just like, can you just please be nice? Just be kind. You know, we're all doing our jobs and we're doing what we've been told to do. And we're not the ones setting those limitations. We just have to do this to keep us all safe. And mostly the community is happy with that because it keeps them safe too. And we are, you know, what are we, community of about, 14,000 people? And if we got one case here in Benalla, the whole town would go down. It'd be so damaging. And the fact that it's in Shepparton's been scary for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a lot. It is a big burden that's placed on hospitality businesses, but particularly, you know, the workers that are there dealing with customers face to face, or you know, even on the phone or whatever it is when you're talking to people about booking conditions. It's I suppose you just need the systems and the communication and the rules to be as clear as possible so that everybody can sort of be on the same side working together towards being reopened and being safe. But it's a lot for businesses to deal with.
It is. It's a massive burden, and you're looking at staff from all walks of life. They might just be, you know, young people who are just working there for 3 hours a week, or they may be, you know, there's so much to deal with, and unless you're equipped and have been dealing with tricky customers for as long as I have, it's a lot. It was a lot for me to deal with. There were days when I just did not want to go to work because I was so anxious about the sort of, you know, fury I might cop from people. And then you've got people who just don't want to watch the news, or they come in and say things like, oh, I forgot my phone, or I don't have a phone, or you know how amazing it is how how many people will say they don't have a phone. It's complete bullshit, but it's constant. And it's just like, don't lie. It's not making life easy for any of us. Let's just get on with it. Or then there's those people who come in and they've been, you know, what do we have the other day? Someone came in from New South Wales when it was hard border lockdown. It's up to 10 a day. It's not even funny. And someone said to the manager, we're not allowed here. What are you talking? Jamie's just turned around and said, I don't believe that you're as stupid as that. I really don't believe you're as stupid as that. I think you know damn well, you know. And it's just that thing where firstly, you can't kid a kid a bit. Just make life easier for the people who are on the front line in that way. And they are, the hospitality people are on the front line as much as those in supermarkets, those patrolling borders. There is a lot of policing that needs to be done that really shouldn't be up to them, because they haven't had years of training for that.
But who else is going to do it? And I'd say hospitality is more on the front line than any other industry, because you're dealing with people who've got their masks off and their mouths open.
Yeah. Last year I really struggled with it because I was still immunocompromised. I'm fine now, but back then I was still fairly fresh out of treatment and I was terrified. I started wearing a mask before people were told to wear masks, and I used to cop dirty looks, and now it's the opposite. If you don't wear one, you get the dirty looks. But it's really scary.
What about vaccination among hospitality workers? Are you finding that people are really keen to get themselves protected in that way?
In my list of connections, both online and face-to-face, yes, absolutely. And we've just had some numbers come out for the regional areas, and Benalla is actually the most highly vaccinated, both on the single and the double doses.
That's so good.
It's so fantastic compared to, other country towns. So we're really leading the way, and, it's something that I'm so proud of, and I'm proud that I'm one of those double vaccinated people. I think it's great, and I just want to see more and more people get vaccinated.
Yeah, same. I'm very happy to be in that club as well. It'd be great to see like towns or, council, local government areas race one another to be the most vaccinated. Like, we're not playing sport at the moment. Couldn't we do that?
Yeah, why not? A bit of healthy competition.
Love it. Alex, is there anything else, any other burning topics that you want to talk about?
I think one thing that I do want to talk about, and I talk about a lot with anyone I come up who I'm training and whatnot, is that whole bartender burnout or that hospitality fatigue, and looking after your body. You go through your 20s and you're invincible, and you do all the partying, and you do all the things that aren't quite right for you, and you sort of bounce back. And as the years go on, the decades move on, it gets harder and harder. And I think that was something I really struggled with going back to the North, though, is just physically how demanding this job is of you, and how much you can do to actually help it. So it's not just about the measures that you take after you've got your injuries or after you've got RSI or your back's screwed or your shoulder's out of whack or whatever it is, your feet are done. It's about trying to prevent those things from happening. So strengthening your core, doing things like yoga, and making sure that inwards you're strong. I've seen and I've trained a lot of women to shake cocktail cans, and we tend to do it over our shoulder like the guys do, but our body structure isn't like that. Our shoulders and our arms aren't made in that way. So I'm always about grounding, getting your feet nice and solid on the floor, holding in your core and pulling the can in front of you rather than above your head. Because I can tell you right now, I've got RSI in my right shoulder from shaking cans for all those years. And if I can help somebody to prevent that sort of industry in order to continue in an industry I love, they love and I love, and I'm all for it.
I love that. That, I mean, even as you're saying that, I'm picturing myself in that position, and yeah, it just feels much better to be, yeah, just like engage my core and shake it in front of me.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I am nowhere near the healthiest person ever, and I just can't do that anymore, but it's so important. It's so, and the right shoes, my God, getting the right shoes. It's not about look. I go to the old, there's a fantastic podiatry shop down the road, and the shoes are daggy and whatnot. But I tell you what, I'll spend that $200 on a pair of daggy shoes that'll last me so much longer and have me less, you know, I used to fall asleep and not be able to sleep because my feet were hurting so much.
Wow.
And it's all about having the right tools, as much as it's about having the right jigger and the right Toby tins. It's just as much what you're wearing as well.
Love it. And what about mindset, or, you know, looking after your mental health?
I think that it's all right. You know, I think we've gone past that era of the customer is always right, because guess what? Most of the time they're not. And I'm not saying that to be inhospitable, because I still believe in, you know, using the right messaging to get across that perhaps there's another way they could look at things. I think that being able to stand strong, particularly now with the extra challenges we have thrown at us, you have every right to either turn around and say, you know, it's not okay for you to speak to me like that, or I disagree with you and this is what needs to happen in order for you to stay on the premises. Like, there's no reason why you can't stand firm and be confident in the fact that you're doing the right thing. And if they want to kick back, then tell them to bloody leave. That's the best thing about working at the Northo, is that the managers will just turn around and just go, no, get out. If you're going to actually abuse my staff, or you're not going to follow the rules, then you have to go. And I think it's okay to stand up for yourself. I think you don't always have to bow down and go, you know, oh, I'm sorry, ma'am, or I'm sorry, sir, or I'm sorry about this, and let me fix that for you. It's like, well, we've done this and we've done this and we've done this, and you're still not happy. There's not much else I can do.
Yeah, I think you're so right. I read a great article about this recently, and I'll put it in the show notes. We are the era of killing the customer with kindness is over, and it's time to stand up for ourselves in hospitality. But I mean, I think what is so important, like, you know, you've got experience and confidence to draw those lines. Some other, you know, less experienced people may not, but they definitely need the support of the managers and the owners to stand up to customers that really just, you know, have gone too far. I think sometimes, you know, a staff member might be given a hard time by a customer, and if they can't sort it out, then they're next given a hard time by the manager or the owner. So I think it really needs to be, those lines need to be able to be drawn with confidence by the person who's on the front line, knowing that they're going to have the backup of the people who are senior to them.
Absolutely. I've stepped out of the physical side of hospitality, and I now work for a not-for-profit called Tomorrow Today here in Benalla. And my work with Tomorrow Today revolves around young people, but particularly teens and those who are transitioning either into work or university. And it's just such a fantastic job, and I love it so much. But one of the programs I've just finished is aimed at getting young people ready for work. It's called Great Start to Work. And we'd take them on workplace visits. We'd go and introduce them to business owners around Benalla and whatnot. And because of my love for hospitality and my connection with the Northo, I took my group to the Northo. And I said to my group, I think everyone in the world needs to spend 6 months in hospitality at the very early stages in their life, because I think that sets you up with a resilience and a confidence that you and an experience that you're never going to get anywhere else. You get to see the absolute best and the absolute worst of people, and you learn how to deal with that. And those sort of life skills will set you up forever. And I just think that's so important. I don't, you know, you can tell those who haven't done customer service and haven't, you know, haven't had to worry about that, the people who treat you like second-class citizens. And I think that's been the great equaliser with COVID, is that all of a sudden we are wanted, you know, people want and desire and miss hospitality, and they miss venues and they miss eating out, and all of a sudden it's so important that we are looked after, and these people are kept in their jobs, and they're, you know, there's a gratitude that does come with it. So yeah, I think there's a lot to be said about working in this industry.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I really hope that as things reopen again, that people are more grateful than they are, I suppose, like stressed and demanding, because that's also been the experience of people, as, you know, customers have been, some of, you know, most people I think are super grateful and just value hospitality more than ever. But then there are those who, I guess, feel for some reason, even more entitled as things reopen and they, you know, get the meals out that they think they deserve. But yeah, no. Well, Alex, I feel like we could talk for hours. There's so many topics and such a rich discussion. You've got such a wealth of experience and such a great perspective on the industry. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today, and I know a lot of people are going to get so much from what you've said today on Dirty Linen. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Danny. It's been really great.
This is Dirty Linen, and I'm Danny Vallant. We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta @dirtylinenpodcast. We can't wait to hear from you.